Well, good morning. Starting things a little bit differently. Obviously, I am not Jeremy. Jeremy continues to be down with whatever it is he has that is causing his vertigo. He was hoping Wednesday that he'd feel better by today and he could at least be here to do communion and offering, to do the announcements. Obviously, that wasn't the case. We continue to pray for him, ask that you join us in that as we try to go about doing the business that God's called us to do, being short a man, and as he continues to try to recuperate and be incredibly frustrated by the fact that the mind is willing, the body is just not on board right now. And so continue to pray for him, to continue to send him notes of encouragement. I know many of you on Facebook have told him to hang in there, and we were praying for you and stuff like that, and I know he appreciates that. Anybody have one of these at home? Yeah? I, for the longest time, did not know what this was or what it was called. It's been in my bedroom since the time that my wife and I got married, and I just knew it as the thing I stepped my toe on, banged my shin into, and that we kept the pillows and blankets in. But as I was preparing for this week's sermon, this idea of a hope chest came up. And so I asked my wife, did you ever have a hope chest? And she looked at me like, you are the biggest idiot. Didn't say it. And she said, we have one. Oh, really? Where is it? That thing you stub your toe and bang your shin on? Yeah, that's it. And so I brought it down because this morning, as we continue our series about hope, as we continue the series of Hope Rising, the idea that we all place our hope in something was just sticking with me. We all find a place to put our hope, don't we? And if you think about people, really, we are irrepressibly hardwired to hope. It's just built into us. If there's a characteristic of who we are, it's that we're irrepressible hopers. Is that not coming up on the screen? There it is. We are irrepressibly hardwired to hope. We're hopers. It's what we do. It's why little kids get excited about Easter egg hunts. Anybody get to watch an Easter egg hunt last week? We got to watch more than our fair share. And we got to watch our kids from age 6 to 11 get really, really excited over the prospect of collecting these goofy little eggs and the hope that inside of them was something of value or something that they would enjoy. It's the same reason that I think kids' eyes light up or adults' eyes light up when there's presents under the Christmas tree, because we are hoping there's something cool in there. We are hardwired to hope. It's why gamblers go to Vegas. It's why investors purchase real estate. It's why I'm still a Dodgers fan after all these years. Yeah, that's right. This is the year, and we won't get to watch it. Yeah. We all hope. We all find something to put our hope in. And you know, that got me thinking about hope chests. This was, for those of you who don't know, this was something that young girls would and still do. Find a chest like this, and they start putting away things that they look forward to using someday or hope to use someday. I got a hold of my mom and I said, did you have a hope chest? She goes, yeah, I did. Okay, so what kind of stuff did you put in there? She says, the first blender that I ever bought, it was also my first credit card purchase. So I had this blender mixer that was in there for the day that, you know, I would someday get it. And I bought this set of dishes and I put it in there for this day that I might someday get married. And Tupperware, doilies. Really? Doilies? Okay. Sure, why not? They were really nice ones, though, apparently. I don't know. And I said, so whatever happened to that? She said, well, you know, after I got married, it became your toy box. I don't remember that. That's okay. We all find something to put our hopes and our dreams and those things that we long for and those things that we aspire for. We all place, and it's kind of physically represented by this box. So let's open it up for a minute. Now let's see, maybe some of this resonates with you. Maybe these are things that at some point you've placed your hope in. I know this guy? Yeah. Yeah, piggy bank. It's always better when it has that jingly sound, right? Maybe at some point in your life, you decided, you know what? As long as there's something in that goofy-looking little pig, I can be at peace, I can have confidence, I can tackle whatever life's going to throw my way. And when problems show up, if I just have enough money, I'll be okay. I can tackle life's issues no matter what it throws my way, as long as there's money in that bank. But maybe at some point you've realized, you know what? Some problems you can't just throw money at. And some problems, no matter what your bank account balance looks like, that problem isn't going away. And even sometimes the number or the color of the number, red versus black, can be a problem. And so you get to a point where you realize, you know what, putting my hope in just money isn't going to do it. But maybe it's not money. Maybe it's the next cool thing that life is going to provide for you. Maybe it's that thing that you're saving your money for. Could be an iPad. This is guilty, honestly. This is my iPad case. And it's obviously a value because I kept it, which probably speaks more to me than anything else. But maybe it's that thing. That thing that's on the horizon that you say, if I can just get this, then whatever life throws at me, I'll be able to tackle because I will have this. Could be owning your house. Could be a new car. Could be some other thing that you just think, you know what, for all my dissatisfaction in life, if I can just get fill-in-the-blank thing, maybe I'll be happy. But you know what I've discovered about these things? They're cool for a little while, and you're happy for a little while. But then something else comes out. I mean, Apple's notorious for this, right? We're on the iPhone 5S, because the iPhone 5 was cool. But you put an S behind it, and people flock to get the newest, thinking, hey, this is going to make me happy. And there are already people, I probably count myself as one of them, some of the staff, when we get together, we're like, yeah, our phone contract's going to be up, and I'm just really waiting to see what they do in October when the iPhone 6 comes out. Aren't we all guilty at some point of saying, that thing, when it comes out, and it's got the newest, greatest, better feature, it's more whatever, man, there'll be happiness, there'll be satisfaction. I can put my hope in, life will be better when I have this thing. But it's not. It may be for a little while, but eventually it disappoints. What about one of these? Anybody put your hope in? Remember, yeah, trophies? Back when trophies meant something, remember? Before everybody got one just for showing up? It's actually not mine. I don't have any because I threw mine away because all the trophies I got were just for showing up. Anyways. Maybe it was the first time you got one of those for doing something and for standing out above the rest of the crowd, and you went, I like this feeling. I like the feeling of recognition. I love the feeling of achievement. And maybe in that moment you said, you know what? Maybe if I achieve enough, maybe if I have enough success and enough acclaim, maybe I can tackle whatever else the world throws at me and whatever other problems come up. So you put your hope in achievement. You put your hope in success. And then what happened the first time you got passed over for a promotion? Or the first time you worked really hard on something and it flopped? Or you discovered you weren't very good at it? Or the first time that you saw somebody else outperform you, out-achieve you, be out recognized. And you realize maybe achievement can't solve all the problems in the world. What about this one? Oh, man. You're young. You're like kids. You're brand new. You're babies. What about the first time that you saw somebody or you saw a couple and they looked genuinely happy? Am I getting anybody with the reflection? No? Okay, sorry. We'll see if this works. We'll put it back here for sake of the lights. Are we good? All right. I'm worried about you. You saw somebody and they were genuinely happy and so in love and so enraptured with their partner, and maybe they're walking down the beach, and it's as though the rest of the world has disappeared. And you looked at that and you thought, I want that. And if I have that, if I find that perfect someone, all the rest of life's problems, everything else that life throws at me, I can tackle that because I've got that perfect someone. But what happened the first time perfect somebody disappointed you or let you down? Or you, as you got to know them, you realized, as wonderful as they are, they're not perfect. Did you move on and try to find the next perfect someone? And on from there and on from there, and you just had a string of people that you went, you just were close, but not good enough. Relationships went bad or went sideways. Or life's problems hit you, and you realize, I have this great and wonderful person, but I still have problems. Life still goes sideways sometimes. And you realize, maybe I can't place all my hope in a relationship. Oh, maybe it's this guy. Maybe you realize, you know what, nothing in life can be certain. And if everything else in life is going to go away, maybe I can still just have my health. And so you've made a huge priority in life to get fit. Oh, there's Switch. Don't want one to be, anyways. But you know, as I was talking to Jeremy, Jeremy's made this really concerted effort this year to get healthy and be healthy. And I'm probably speaking for him now. This has been the most devastating year for his health ever. He went back to the gym. He started working out. He started working towards running a marathon before he got sick. Actually, the day he got sick, we were talking about it. He said, you know, I went out this morning, and I ran an 11-minute mile. And I got done running the entire mile. I said, this is an accomplishment for me, running an entire mile without stopping. And I said, I think I can keep going. And so he did like 2.5 miles. He took like a 2-minute break at some point. But he did like 2.5 miles in like 24 minutes. He's like, I'm working my way up to running like a 5K. And then I'll be satisfied. And you know what? I know people in my life who they've said, you know what, if I can just have my health, that's the one thing I can control. Life goes crazy in all these other ways, but I'm going to put my hope in being healthy. And so they're crazy about their fitness. They watch everything that goes in their body and they track every calorie. And for some of them, they've had the realization, you can do everything in the world to protect your health. And you should. I try to be in the gym as much as I can. And you absolutely should. But then they go to the doctor and they say, you know that thing that, yeah, it's cancer. And their world falls apart around them. And they realize, you know what? No matter how much I try, I can't put my hope in just being fit, in just being healthy. And here's the thing, in all of this that I've realized, and it's unrealized hope. It's when you hope for something and it goes sideways and you don't get what you want. Unrealized hope is the root of disappointment. Is it not? This morning we're talking about, what do you do when life doesn't go the way you've wanted it to? When things don't go the way you want them? When your plans all of a sudden get thrown into the blender and made a mess of? you've got a Bible, go with me. Luke chapter 24. The very conclusion of Luke's gospel. Now we're going to start in verse 13. To pick up, to let you know where we're at in the story, Jesus has been crucified. He's been set in a tomb. His disciples are strewn about. They've abandoned him. They've run and they've hidden. Some of the women went to the tomb hoping that they could find a way in so that they could properly dress and treat Jesus' body. Give him a proper burial. Discovered that the tomb had been strewn about. The rock rolled away. And then we get this story. We get this story from two of Jesus' disciples. We'll get one of their names. The other one, we have no idea who it is. But here's what the text says. We're going to start in verse 13. Now that same day, meaning Sunday, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were walking with each other, talking about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. I love this. But they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. Here we've got two disciples who have witnessed the events in Jerusalem. And on Sunday, have turned and started walking home. It was over. They'd hitched their wagon to Jesus, and then Jesus had been executed. So they're walking home, and this person greets them on the street. And you have to understand, this is. Concluding a religious festival. I mean, there's a mass exodus taking place from Jerusalem, and there are tons of people on the road, and one of them comes up and just starts talking to them. "Hey, what are you guys doing? What are you talking about?" And they're downcast. They're disappointed. They're let down. See, they thought Jesus was going to deliver them from Roman oppression. They thought Jesus was going to be the one to come in and say, "These Roman soldiers who've occupied your city, we're sending them home. These Roman tax collectors that have been robbing you of what little you have, we're kicking them out." And with Jesus hanging on a cross, their plans, the disciples' plans, were dashed. Their expectations were ruined, and their illusion of who they thought and they wanted Jesus to be was crushed. And they realized we were hoping in the wrong thing. And our hope let us down, and now we are disappointed, and we are beat down. And so they are walking back home with their tail between their legs, saying, "What do we do now? Where do we go from here?" And then verse 15, Jesus interjects himself into the conversation, literally comes up and starts walking with them, but they're kept from recognizing him. I have no idea how this verse works. I don't know if God was just like, "And you shall not see him," and they did not see him. Maybe. There's this thing called face disassociation. It's an actual issue where people can remember everything else, but there's certain faces that just drop out of their brain, and they are unable to recognize them. Could be somebody they've known their entire life, and they're just, boom, unable to recognize them. Everything else normal, can't recognize a particular face or a handful of faces. And maybe God said, "Now's a good time for you to have that." I don't know. But whatever the case is, Jesus is able to approach these men, and even though they've walked with him, and they've talked with him, and they've listened to him teach and preach, They've been with him on the road. Now, in this moment, they cannot recognize him. And you know what? I got thinking about that and realized this. Sometimes Jesus shows up in the midst of our disappointment, but too often we can't see him. Jesus shows up when life isn't going the way we want it to, but we can't see him. And I know for me, a lot of the times the issue isn't that Jesus is hiding. The issue is I am so fixated on my devastation, on my disappointment, on all the things that haven't gone right, and all the things that have gone wrong, that I can't see him. He could be standing right in front of me, and I can't see him. Quite literally, he was standing right in front of these disciples, and they couldn't see him. Sometimes in the midst of our disappointment, Jesus is there, and Jesus is present, but we can't see him. So if we keep going, basically Jesus has said, so what are you guys talking about? And the disciples, after recovering from their being downcast, start sharing with this what they perceive to be a stranger, the story of what has transpired in Jerusalem. Although I love the disciples in this moment, they kind of give Jesus this, where have you been? Like, under what rock have you been living? That these things that went down in Jerusalem, they were the talk of the town, and you were oblivious. I think it would be really cool if Jesus doesn't do this, to go like, you're right. I was under a rock, and then I rolled it away. He didn't do that. Could have. I would have. Another reason I'm not Jesus. This is what they say as they're recounting. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these last few days? What things? Jesus asked. About Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. And check out what they say next. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. But we had hoped. Ever catch yourself saying that? I do. My guess, there isn't a person in the room who at one time or another hasn't said, we had hoped. We'd hoped this was going to be the job I always dreamed it would be. We hoped that by this point, we'd be able to retire. We had hoped we would be able to hold on to the house. We had hoped we could have a child. We had hoped we could have another child. We had hoped that it was just a scare. We had hoped that it wasn't cancer. We had hoped our son, or we had hoped our daughter, was finally getting their life back on track. We had hoped our marriage would make it through the tough times. Yet even for Jesus' disciples, things had not gone the way they had hoped. They'd even placed their hope in the best thing possible, Jesus. And yet because their hopes didn't align with the reality, they were at a point where they were disappointed, they were distraught, and they were let down. Now each of us, we're walking our own unique journey. Some of us, like the disciples, are in the midst of disappointment. And for some of us, there might be a disappointment just beyond the horizon. So what do we do when life doesn't go as planned? Or maybe the better question, if you're entertaining the thought of or considering a relationship with Jesus, what does Jesus offer us or provide in those moments when life doesn't go the way we planned? So let's go back to the story and find it out. Verse 25. The disciples who recounted all this, Jesus, in his tremendous compassion, says this. How foolish you are. And how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And then, beginning with Moses and the prophets, Jesus spends 7 miles of walking, recounting the entire Old Testament and revealing to these disciples the gospel. Revealing to the disciples that someone must suffer, someone must pay the penalty for sin, so that there might be life and hope for wayward, lost people. Skipping forward a bit, they finally get to where they're going. They sit down and say, stay with us, have dinner. So Jesus sits down. They break bread, and in the moment where they break bread together, their eyes are open. They see Jesus for who he is, their Messiah, their risen Savior. Pick it up here. Then their eyes were open, and they recognized him. And he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us? Well, he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us. They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them, assembled together and saying, it is true. The Lord has risen and he has appeared. What does Jesus offer in the midst of our disappointment? In the midst of those moments when life doesn't go the way we had wanted it to? When things don't go as we planned, Jesus offers us first a new identity. Look at what he did for these disciples. On the road out, their 7-mile walk, they were failures. They were disappointments. They were guys who had gotten behind something or someone only to find out that it wasn't real. Only to find out that it wasn't what they hoped it would be. They were investors holding stock certificates that weren't worth the paper they were printed on. They were men and women who had invested their lives in something only to find out the person leading it was a swindler. There are people who have worked really hard to realize that it wasn't paying off. It wasn't nearly what they hoped or expected it to be. But then Jesus showed up, and he gave them an entirely new identity. They went from being these foolish guys to being eyewitnesses to a risen, resurrected, alive again Messiah. They became two of the first people to see Jesus resurrected with their own eyes. That's pretty cool. That's a new identity. They had the opportunity to now go back to Jerusalem, and I have to imagine really slow walk from Jerusalem to Emmaus, really quick on the road back, right? Like, these guys are booking it. They might not be marathon runners, but they're running the marathon of their life. They went at once back to Jerusalem and reported what they had seen. They became eyewitnesses to walk in the room. How cool would that be? Like, kick the door down, boom! Guys, he's alive! It's awesome! We walked with him, and he taught us, and he revealed scripture to us, and now we get it. Our hope was in the wrong thing, not because Jesus was the wrong thing, but our hopes were off. He's so much better than we thought he was. They got a new identity. And the cool thing is that when you place your faith in Jesus Christ, when you place your hope in Jesus Christ, the one who was in a tomb and then came out, resurrected and alive again, you get a new identity as well. We read it last week. Let's do this. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 3. Talking about the very same new life Paul says, being made new in the attitude of your minds. Sorry, I skipped a little bit. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 3. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Can I throw you for a loop, Elizabeth?
It's okay.
I'm sorry. Still be friends?
Yeah.
All right. Good. You know what? In this moment, these disciples realize our past doesn't define us. It's not going to prevent us from who God has created and called us to be. And in the very same way, this morning, your past and all the hopes that you've had in life that have been dashed, they're not going to prevent you from becoming the person that God created and called you to be. Because that old life, that life where you were hoping in the wrong things, can be over. And you can begin a new life in which you're hoping for the right thing. The one thing that doesn't disappoint. The God who created the universe and knows you by name. See, when we talk about a new identity, you can take whatever your old identity and compare it to this one. Because you can say, when you accept Jesus, I am a loved and valued child of the Most High God, who defined my worth when he paid the highest of prices, when he made a staggering sacrifice for me and for my past and for my sin, with the giving of his son's life. No matter who you see when you look in the mirror, no matter how great or how numerous your past failings may be, Jesus, in the midst of your disappointment, offers you a new identity. The second thing that Jesus offers, that Jesus provides in the midst of our disappointment, Jesus offers a transformed perspective. He actually changes our minds. This is the verse that I read a moment ago, because I skipped ahead in my notes. We're going to go back to it. We're going to edit it out of the videotape. This never officially happened. All right? And if anybody in this room says otherwise, we'll talk. Here we go. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 23. Talking about the same new life, describes one of the characteristics of this new life. Being made new in the attitude of your minds. See, there's a mindset that breeds hopelessness and despair in it, and it's rooted in a faulty perspective. The first, there's actually two falsehoods. Let's look at the first one. The first is a falsehood that says, my discouragement in the thing I was hoping for is going to last forever. It's permanent. But here's the thing. Disappointments aren't permanent. The disciples on the road to Emmaus experienced a disappointment. But you know what? Life had just beyond that disappointment something far better. And God's plan had something far better than the disappointments that you might find yourself in the middle of. Because there's a possibility that each and every disappointment that you've experienced has been leading you to the moment where you say, I've been putting my hope in the wrong thing. And today, I'm going to put my hope in something that doesn't fail, that doesn't come up short. I'm going to put my hope in a resurrected Jesus. The second falsehood, the second false attitude, is the one that says, this disappointment is going to undermine everything and every corner and every part and every component of my life, meaning that disappointment is pervasive. Tough circumstances don't last forever. They feel like they do, right? Like you're in the middle of it, and you're like, this is never, and it's affected everything, and there is no corner of my life that isn't affected by it. They don't last forever, nor do they have to infect every aspect of your life. Oftentimes, what infects every aspect of our life is that we fixate on a disappointment, and it overwhelms every aspect of your life. Ever have a crummy day? Right? Yeah, right? Ever have a crummy day because one thing at the beginning of your day didn't go right, and it impacted everything from there on out, the rest of the day could be great. But it's ruined because in this moment, something happened. And it set you on a path that couldn't be avoided, that couldn't be stopped. And the real mistake was believing that this one disappointment, this one area in which things didn't go my way or things didn't go as planned, now has to ruin everything that follows it. I think sometimes we are our own worst enemies because we look at a problem and we allow the problem to multiply and we allow the problem to get bigger and we allow the problem to overwhelm us so much so that all the other joy that God has intended for us to say, in this you may be disappointed, but find hope and peace in this, we miss out on. Because we're still fixated on whatever it is that's disappointed us, and we're still believing that our disappointments are pervasive and they overwhelm. Look at it this way. Romans chapter 8, verse 28 says, "We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." Maybe the next time you're facing something and you look at it and go, man, this is good, and this is horrible, and it's going to be pervasive in my life. It's going to ruin everything else. Think about this. God took the worst thing in all of history, the death of his son. He took the worst thing in all of history. The one time there was a person on the earth who was sinless, who was without blame, who was a good guy. That was unrighteously murdered. He took that horrible event, and because of that horrible event, each and every person in this room has the opportunity for hope and life and an eternal life with Jesus Christ, as opposed to an eternal death separated from God. He took the worst thing in history, the death of his son, and created the best thing for every person in the world. See, that's not just a matter of fact. That's a matter of a different perspective on something that we should look at and go, that is horrible. But yet God has the power to take what is evil and what was horrible and give us a new perspective and reveal to us what he is doing to work good out of evil. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 18. God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ. There's the new perspective. You look at the cross, you say, it's tragic, it's horrible. And God's saying, I am fixing so much broken stuff through the cross. It's a good thing. The cross is a reminder that not only can God understand our suffering, he can transform and he can redeem our suffering, because God makes good out of bad. Joseph finds himself in Genesis chapter 50, having the opportunity to confront his brothers who years earlier had thrown him in a pit, sent him off to exile in Egypt as a slave. And he has this awesome moment where he reveals who he is. They're freaking out because they expect this is the last thing we see. This guy's now going to kill us for all that we've done to him. And he says, what you intended for evil, God used for good. Your circumstances are not permanent, because God is going to work them for good. And they are not pervasive, because God claims, he promises, that he works all things for good. So does that include illness? Yep. We haven't figured out why Jeremy's sick yet. We look forward to the day we can look back on and go, God was doing something good. Maybe it was daring me to be the one on stage last week preaching. Maybe it's that I need to be the one delivering. I don't know. Maybe Jeremy needed to time off or to learn something or to evaluate something. Who knows? But God's going to work it for good. Does it include marital problems? Yes. Financial ruin? Yes. Children born with disabilities or certain needs? Absolutely. Losing a loved one? Yeah. Even in those moments, of unspeakable pain, God is working for good. Last week, I hope you were here to catch it. We had the opportunity to create a video with John Hogan. And he talks about the occurrences in his event and in his life that brought him to a relationship with Christ. And the hinge point of that was getting a life sentence in prison. Guys, there's nothing good about being in prison. Except apparently there is, because without prison, John Hogan would not know a relationship with Jesus Christ. And from the moment that experience happened, his life began to be transformed. If for some reason you weren't here for Easter, it's up on the website, the video, you can find it in the media. I encourage you to go look at it. If there's a message that says God can do good things out of bad circumstances, it is that. And this morning, if you find yourself in bad circumstances, I just want to tell you, God is not done working in your life. I want to tell you that if you will place your faith in Jesus Christ, if you place your hope in Jesus Christ, you will discover that there is something that you can place hope in that will not disappoint. And when life goes sideways and things don't go the way you planned, there is hope and there is life. We had every intention, if you were here last week, to set up the tent that we had outside and have some leaders there for you to visit with if you needed to kind of decompress or follow up or speak to someone following this message. The wind has ruined it, as all good things get ruined in the high desert by the wind. So too our tents got ruined. So what we're going to do is we're gonna invite you to come forward as we've done in the past. If you would like to speak with a leader, if you're visiting for the first time, I told you earlier to hold on to those communication cards that we tell you what to do. We'd also like to invite you to come forward, talk with someone, just so that we can have a moment to shake your hand, to get to know your name, to thank you for being here. We also have a gift for you that we'd like to say thanks for being here. Would you stand with me as we close in prayer? Let's pray. Our God and Heavenly Father, thank you for this morning. Thank you for the work that you're doing in our lives to remind us that hope is not gone, and that even in the midst of life not going the way we expected, that there is still plan, and you are still doing good things, and you are still encouraging us and working in us and working through us. God, I lift up the people in this room who may not yet have a relationship with you, the people in this room who may be placing their hope in something else, something represented here on this table or in this box, or maybe something else that they can pinpoint, God. And I ask that you would convict their heart and just remind them of the ways that those things that we put in the place of you have disappointed us and let us down. And that you would give them confidence in you, trust in you, to make the decision today that they're going to place their hope in something that doesn't waver, that doesn't move, that doesn't fail. And that they would begin a relationship with you through your Son, Jesus Christ. That he would come into their lives and begin to transform their mindsets and their perspectives, to reveal to them that there is a hope that doesn't fade and doesn't disappoint, and it's found in Jesus Christ. We ask all these things in your Son's name. Amen.